But in reality, the event we have what is supposed to be in the time. Yeah. That's right. So that when you can actually see it, there is a difference. No, I mean, it's a part of the way to put it, but whenever they know it's a $10 difference, sometimes they eat, sometimes two. But on the other hand, it's $10 difference because they know it's a $10 difference. That's what it is. It means two. So there's no place to stop, there's a dollar, there's a an hour longer.
Some say, okay, since we are of course living in the law,
So we have those terms of additional names. Okay? So we have those terms for interest. Okay, okay. But the question is about the eating of mantras. Is there a mixture that eats mantra every day at bedtime? The answer is technically yes. Okay? Technically, the mixture of eating mantra is only at the same time. Okay? The rest of the time, it is voluntary. Obviously, not allowed to be on the upper. But, for example, the non-particular basis of mantra, you don't realize the number of things that you don't want to do. Okay? And you don't want to put the lid on your head. Okay? But, I don't have to say that. I'm not happy about that. It's the fact that you draw up, okay? But nevertheless, the fact that you can sit down and eat, you know, and dance with that dance, you know, that is so, you know, tough. But remember, there is one big difference. That's the difference in color. After Seder night, we make a bracha after Avos Yevachim in the Oret, and we say, Oh, my God, Hashem, and my God, Oh, my God, and my God, Oh, my God, Oh, my God, right? We praise God who has commanded us, giving us the commandment to this one of eating mantra. At other times, but I'm not going to be for the second day, it's still not good, okay? But at all the other meals in Pesach, we eat mantra, the only bracha of the day is Avos. Do not make the bracha for nothing, okay? That would be a question about that, okay? So it's in the middle of the morning. Yes. Okay. We have a special bracha, Allah to us, bracha. We praise God who commanded us, sanctified us, commanded us to eat mantra. Okay? But that bracha is reserved only for the Seder night. Because then it is a mitzvah in the Torah that we have to eat mantra. Okay? The other days in Pesach, all the other meals in which we eat bracha, the only bracha that we make is Hamotzi. We do not make the bracha Allah Shabbat. Okay? Because it is voluntary and not a mitzvah. Okay? Yeah. So, first bracha is derived from the right of the okay? So the question that they asked in final value, what is the difference between them? So the answer is, I mean, both of them said what? That the evening has to precede the daytime, right? Both of them. So I'm not going to worry for a second, the difference is something much more than okay? That only each one has their own brush as to how to derive that particular interpretation. But in reality, there is no difference between the two. Okay? Our poor doesn't give it a name. That's the only difference. Rabba disagrees with him. Rabba Omar Chatzos Laila Yudhidina says that midnight is a difference between them. What does he mean by that? Well, the fact you know that, for example, in the days of the eating of the matzah, it has to be done before matzah. In case of the eating, you know, the same as the matzah. This is the difference. Of course, that wouldn't apply to what? It wouldn't apply to the presentation of faces that are on the Yom Kippur. Because there, the fact that matzah is something else. So, that would be the difference. Omer Adi Seir Omer Rachman. David said in the Hebrew Rachman, he says, Kol Tefer, the Kamei Tzadik says, whenever we are in doubt as to whether we should have another day and therefore should be observed one day or 3 days of Yom Kippur, understand? Then in that particular case he says, we always have to go and add the additional day. We cannot observe the day prior to the day that we think is done. Remember, says, is this to say If I do so, the six are given a list of messages, right? It's just to say that we observe, let's say, Pesach is still busy. When? On the 15th and the 16th, when we make 2 days young, correct? But our buzzer, the 14th, we do not do that. This is what it means. It says, for the end of the system, it says, why couldn't we observe also the 14th? Maybe we could observe the 14th and the 15th, and not the 15th and the 16th. In other words, let's observe the day before, because maybe instead of the month previous having 30 days, maybe it would only have 29 days, right? And therefore, the correct day would be on the 14th and not the 15th, right? There's a deal with the school, maybe this is what they happen, right? First of all, that they made the school of the Yom, they made the month of Av a shorter, the school of the Elul, and they also made the month of Elul also short. In other words, only 29 days in Av and only 29 days in Elul. And in that case, what do we have? Then we find that the 14th of Tishrei could be the Thursday of Sukkot, the Thursday day. So the Gemara comes and says, Kokot, no serious. The next page is something to stop, so I'm not going to talk about another page just for a couple of words, okay? But we're going to do it again next time. It says, Ray Yahweh, the Jewish, call it Tishrei. He says, that doesn't happen, because to have two months in a row, in other words, all the hills are going to be both 29 days, he says, people will hear that this is such an extraordinary event and they'll be aware of it, and as a result, they'll know what is the right day to observe. But it doesn't happen as a normal rule, and therefore, don't expect it on that list. Of course, we know. In our calendar, all is always 30 days, and all is always 29 days, so of course the problem is out for rise. Alright, we'll stop at this particular point and continue. Yes, I'll turn this week. I'll see if we have a meeting, so we'll see if we have a meeting.
Tonight is the 5th of April, the year 2000, and we are about to begin right now in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, Daf Chaf Aleph Omid Aleph. Okay? We start from the first line, but remember that we already did the first few words as a follow-up, you know, to the previous page, where they say that, you know, people in general, they know that if it ever happened that both Av and Elul would be Chaser, whereas the normal pattern is what? That Av is Mole, in other words, Av has 30 days, and Elul has 29, Chaser, right? But if it should ever happen that the Beis Din in Yerushalayim, as a result of visual observance, or for whatever reason it may be, would declare that both Av and Elul both should be minus a day, okay, then in that particular case, people would be aware of it, because this is so unusual an occurrence that people would be talking about it, and so that's what they mean when it says, Kola Yisrael, literally, there is a voice to it. In other words, the word gets around, people talk about it, it's a subject of conversation, so that they would be aware then that Rosh Hashanah would come, let's say, a day earlier than you would normally expect it, you know, in a normal situation. Okay? So now we continue with a story. Levi Ikla Lebovel, the Chatzav Tishrei. Levi was one of the scholars in Eretz Yisrael, but you know, we've already seen that they would go back and forth from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel or from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. Okay? So Levi came to Bavel, and what is the day that he arrived? He arrived on the 11th day of the month of Tishrei. So Omar, so he said to the people in Babylonia, Bosim Tafshila de Bavlai b'yom Rabbah de Ma'arava. He says, boy, you must be enjoying your food today, being Yom Kippur, in Eretz Yisrael. Meaning what? Meaning that in Eretz Yisrael, they had made, right, Yom Kippur on that particular day, so that the Babylonians who were fasting the previous day were actually not observing Yom Kippur, but they had fasted before, and so on the day, which according to Levi and the authorities in Eretz Yisrael was Yom Kippur, they were having a good time eating. So he says to them, "Oh, did you enjoy that food that you're eating today on Yom Kippur?" Because of the Yom HaRabbah, the great day, of course, the great day of the year. Okay, so so they said to him, "Ashid, were you a witness? Were you a witness to what? Were you a witness to the fact that you heard that the Beis Din actually proclaimed, the month of Tishrei at the time that you claim that it was?" So Amaluhu. So he said to him, he said to them, "Lo shamat mipi Beis Din Mekudosh." No, he says, "I never really heard the Beis Din say the word Mekudosh." The reason being, according to Rashi, that he had left prior to the official announcement. And having left prior to the official announcement, so he never heard the Beis Din do it. And therefore, when he finally got to Babylonia, which was quite a few days later, we have to assume also that he did not travel on Rosh Hashanah itself. I obviously didn't travel on Yom Kippur, according to his calculations, so that, as a result, there was a lapse of time between the time that he had left Eretz Yisrael and the time that he came to Babel. And as a result, even though he knew that the Beis Din was bound to say, that Rosh Chodesh falls on this day, this is Rosh Hashanah, and so on, but nevertheless, the word never got to Babylonia on time from him. So, question.
He should have been fasting.
Right. So, should they be fasting 2 days or not? This is the problem. So, as a result, we have to assume what? That probably when the news reached the Babylonians, they were a little bit confused as to whether to fast another day, Yom Kippur, or not. But, needless to say, they were not very, very happy with the news that he said. Okay? We'll take a look at Rashi. He says, Ashid, he says, okay, give your testimony, that you actually heard them say, then we will accept it upon us, but no, we won't eat again another day, right? So he says, Lo Shamadvim, I'm reading the Rashi. He says, Lo Shamadvim, be best than Mekudash. I didn't hear it. He says, Lo Ayid. I cannot give any testimony to that effect. Lo Ayid Lachem, right? Because later on we're going to be learning that al kulon shluchim yotzim ba'erev, that for the various months shluchim leave in the evening. We'll come to that a little bit later. Kigod, for example, im lo kitshuhu biyom labed, right? If they did not declare that it is Rosh Chodesh or Rosh Hashanah, whatever it may be, on the 30th day, then yotzim ha-shluchim ba'erev. Then the emissaries would leave in the evening, lomar to say me'ubarhu, that the month is going to be me'ubar, it's going to have another, it's a day later. Aval al nisan v'tishrei, but when it came, that's for an ordinary month, but for nisan and tishrei, afal pi sheyodit, sheyekashuhu lemochar, v'yom lamed alech, even though people are aware that not having declared before, so undoubtedly the Beis Din would declare the following day, namely the 31st day, which would mean that Elul would have what? 30 days, right? Sha'arei ein Rosh Hashanah nidcha l'shloshim mishnayim, because Rosh Hashanah cannot be pushed off for a 32nd day, right? Afilo hachi, nevertheless, ein yotz'in, the witnesses do not leave the Beis Din, ad sheyishmu v'pi Beis Din Mekudosh, until they hear from the mouth of the Beis Din itself that the month has been sanctified, right? V'ani lo shamati v'pi Beis Din. I didn't hear it, he says. Shelo ha'yisi v'mekom, I was not in the place, sheyoshu Sanhedrin sham. Okay. So as we see, the question, should they fast or should they not fast another day? Well, obviously, that problem wouldn't exist for us today because of the fact, that we have a calendar, so we know that when it's Yom Kippur, we only fast one day, okay? But they were in a quandary as to what to do. But obviously, without the official word, they were not that ready to accept the testimony of Levi, because he said he hadn't heard them say it. Okay. So, Machri is Rabbi Yochanan. Along comes Rabbi Yochanan. He makes the following declaration. He says, "Kol heicho de motu shluchi nisen, le motu shluchi tishrei, le avdu trei yomei." Okay. The shluchim have to go, right, and they cover a certain territory in order to get to Babylonia, correct? Now, of course, you have intermediate places, you know, in their journey until they reach the far end of where they're going in Babylonia. And so there are places that are going to receive the testimony of the witnesses that, you know, the Beis Din had declared the month, right? They'll receive it earlier than those that are further away. Okay? Now, we're going to learn, as we turn over the page, B'yotz Hashem tonight, that the Shuluchim were not allowed to be Mechalel Shabbos Yontov. They were not. This is why I said Levi, you know, came later, because he couldn't come earlier, since he had to observe Shabbos and Yontov, and therefore he couldn't travel. And that's why he first arrived, you know, later. Okay. So, at any rate, there were areas, however, which it would be easier to get to if they were announcing, you know, when Rosh Chodesh Nisan was, so that people, of course, would know when Pesach should be observed, as compared to when Yom Kippur would be, when Sukkot would be. Why? Because between Rosh Chodesh Nisan and Pesach, there is no great distance to cover. I mean, there are no, you know, you'll have maybe a Shabbos, maybe two Shabbos in between, right? But you don't have both Shabbos and Yom Tov in which you're not allowed to travel. Whereas, when it comes to telling people when the Beis Din decided to declare Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, you can't go on Rosh Hashanah, you can't go on Shabbos Teshuvah, right? You can't go on Yom Kippur. So in all those cases, you're first getting there later before you can announce, for example, when Sukkot is going to be observed. So this is what he's saying. Rechanan is saying as follows. He says, wherever those people who go out to tell about Nisan can get to, but those who go out to announce, you know, the fact when is Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, because it's, you know, they haven't been able to travel that same distance. So he says, in that particular case, Le'avdu Trei Yomei, he says, let the people in those areas observe 2 days Yontif. You hear? And why? He says, Gezeira Nisan Atu Tishrei. He says, because I make a decree that they should observe 2 days Yontif Pesach, that's Nisan, right? Because of the fact that, you know, you can't be doing any less than what you do with Rosh Hashanah, where because of doubt, because you couldn't hear the news, you have to observe how many days Rosh Hashanah? 2 days Rosh Hashanah. You understand? So here we already see, you know, that in areas there was Rosh Hashanah being observed for 2 days. Yes?
Yeah. We actually get this now from Rav Yochanan. This is where this all comes from.
He's one of the sources, definitely. There are other reasons too. I mean, because it is possible that the witnesses were not able to get to the Beis Din earlier than, let's say, what normally would be the day of Rosh Hashanah. In other words, people would expect to observe Rosh Hashanah on the 30th of Elul, so to speak. In other words, that would be the first day of Tishrei, right? Because they expect that Elul has how many days? Only 29, right? Nevertheless, the Beis Din still did not have a chance to declare that. So, if that's the case, then they would observe both the 30th, which would be, you know, might possibly be the last day of Elul according to the Beis Din, right? And the following day, which to us would be the second of Tishrei, but you know, to them, it would be the first day of Tishrei in accordance with the citing and the official declaration of the Beis Din. So there again, there was a possibility of observing 2 days Rosh Hashanah.
Well,
yeah.
Like
yeah, approximately. Approximately, yeah.
Where was he?
He was in Eretz Yisrael.
Oh,
I forget what town exactly. Yeah, that I couldn't tell you. But he was one of the great sages in Eretz Yisrael, there's no question. Rabbi Yochanan, right. This is not Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, that's Rabban Yochanan. Right. But this is Rabbi Yochanan, right.
And it's also not the
He would be after Bar Kokhba, right. As I say, somewhere either the 200s or something like that.
Yeah, what right. Is derived from him. Is that what you're saying?
In this particular case, he gives authority to it, right.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Yes?
What does Rosh Hashanah being observed 2 days?
Today, yes.
Today, it was not.
Originally, no. Originally, Rosh Hashanah was observed only one day, except, as I said, if the Beis Din didn't have a chance, you know, to declare that the 30th day was actually Rosh Hashanah, but they couldn't do it until the 31st. So people would observe both the 30th and the 31st.
Two separate issues. Why
right.
Rosh Hashanah is now 2 days.
Right, right.
And why basically all of the
that's correct.
Right,
because of the difficulty originally of getting the news on time to the people in the Gola, so they took to observing 2 days Yontif, as we see from his Gezerah, right, which is a decree. And of course, right, right, because they had to hear it officially from the Beis Din. That's the answer. Yeah. So this is the origin of that, and of course. Later on, you know, the Gemara Beitza says that, you know, why do we still observe 2 days Yontif in the Gola when we know, you know, our calendar is fixed and we know when the holidays should occur? So the answer is because Minhag Avoseihem Yadehem. In other words, it's become the custom of our ancestors from way, way back, and therefore because it is a hallowed custom, this is why we keep it to this very day. So that's the story. Yeah.
Go on.
Right. I had a teacher, he happened to be a Reconstructionist.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, he chafed under the fact that he had to observe 2 days Yontif. So he says, you know, it should have been Farkert, he says. In other words, in America, where it's hard to keep Yontif, they should only have 1 day Yontif. Whereas in Eretz Yisrael, we are living among Jews, it's easy to keep 2 days Yontif. You should keep 2 days Yontif. That was his title. Okay. Right.
You should see in Israel where they have no days Yontif.
Yes, that's already a different story. Right. Going to the beach on Yom Kippur, right? Yeah, well. But I think that the majority of Jews in Eretz Yisrael are not that. That bad over there. That most of them do observe Yom Kippur. Yeah.
There
yeah.
Were
right.
Very difficult.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I remember I was early telling a story. It shows how we are in the United States. And when she was a child, somebody in her neighborhood, which is a Jewish neighborhood in Boston, didn't keep Yom Kippur. There's always everyone's right,
right.
Of course. There was like a sense of shame.
Yeah.
He would sit in his house with his with the
shame.
Just what you say, you know, the
right.
Blindfold
yeah.
down.
Yeah.
Do whatever he wanted,
yeah.
but he,
yeah.
he wouldn't. He would be ashamed. Of it. But the way in Eretz Israel, it's like they make a demonstration.
Yeah, the Chilonim. Yes. Right.
And,
yeah.
Mass majority of people were in shul, but I remember very, very strongly there was this speech, the first time Yom Kippur, everything is quiet. And I remember this mother sent her children out in the middle of the street, everybody was walking to shul, and these kids were rollerblading up and down the street, you know, sliding in and out of the people walking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, people don't have that sense of shame, that sense of derech eretz, I mean, respect for the rights of others, or for the, you know, the beliefs and the practices of others. It's tragic, right? Okay, to get back to the text, okay. So, Rabbi Aibu bar Nagri, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Iklu lahu asra, the other motu shluchim nisun, the motu shluchim tishmi. Okay, so it so happened that two of the students of Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Aivu bar Nagri and Rabbi Chiya bar Rabba, they happened to come to such a place where, you know, the emissaries who go out to announce about Nissen were able to reach, but those who go out in order to announce, you know, Tishrei were unable to reach that particular area, right? And what did the Rabbi Yochanan say? He said, in such a place, what do you have to do? You have to keep 2 days Yontif. Okay? So, what did they do? Okay. So, where is it? Yeah. Yeah. So, the Avdei Chad Yoma, right? So, the people in that particular area, in that particular locality where they happened to come to, they observed only 1 day Yontif. And these two disciples of Rabbi Yochanan didn't say a word to them.
He's talking about Pesach, rather than...
Yeah, whatever. It was 2 days Yontif, anyway. So, Shoma Rabbi Yochanan, heard about it, the Ikpit, and he got angry. Omalahu, and he said to these two disciples of his, Lav Amir Lechua Hecha de Motor Shnuchin Nisun and Motor Shnuchin Tishrei and the Abdi Chayomi, right? He said, Nisun Otto Tishrei. Didn't I tell you that if you come to a place, that in any place where, which can be reached by the Shnuchin announcing Nisun, but cannot be reached by the Shnuchin who have to announce when Rosh Chodesh Tishrei is, that in that particular case, they have to observe, even in the month of Nisan, in other words, Pesach, right, to observe 2 days Yontif. And this is a decree because we want to make sure that people will honor Pesach the same way that they honor, let's say, Rosh Hashanah, right? So, in other words, what? He was angry with them. So, in other words, he felt what? That they had acted wrongly in not reproving the people and telling them that they should observe 2 days Yontif. Okay. Of course, this, you have to realize, was at a time, you know, when the things were still a little bit in a state of flux, right? They didn't have the calendar that we have today. Today, it goes without saying, you know, if you're not Eretz Yisrael, you observe only 2 days. The one exception, of course, being Yom Kippur, because we cannot impose on the community that they should fast 2 days in a row, 48 hours. And yet now we're going to see that some people actually did. This is what the next story tells us. Rava Avarogil the Hava Yasib Taniso Tre Yome. Rava, who of course is one of the great authorities living in Babylonia, right? So he was accustomed that he would sit and fast 2 successive days. In other words, he fasted 48 hours. Okay. Zim Lechada. Once, Ishtacha Kavose Rab Nachman. Okay. So Rab Nachman happened also to do exactly the same thing like him. Yosibetan Nisei Kula Yomid Kippure. So he sat and he observed the fast for the entire day of Yom Kippur. L'urta osahu gavra. And the following day, a certain person came in Omale and he told him, in other words, the story is first about the Nachman that he did what? He fasted the day of Yom Kippur, correct? Okay. Now, all of a sudden, a messenger comes to him from Eretz Israel in Omale and he said to him, L'mocha Yom Marova. Tomorrow is Yom Kippur in Eretz Israel. So Omalei, so he said to him, Eicha'at, where are you from? So Omalei said, Midamaharia. He says, I come from a place called the Maharia. Okay. So, of course, what do we see in the word the Mahari? We see the word Dam, right? So he says to him, O Malay, he says, Dam Tehe Yachmiso. In other words, you should have a bloody end. Why? Kori Alei, and then he quoted a pasuk concerning this, and he said, Kalim Hoyerot Beinu. It's a pasuk, of course, in Eicha, which means literally, our pursuers were too swift for us. In other words, why did you come so fast to tell me that they're fasting in Eretz Yisrael, so that what? Obviously, Rav Nachman had to fast an additional day. So that's why he was angry, because he had to fast both days of Yom Kippur. All right. But fortunately, we have a calendar which tells us that only one day of Yom Kippur is enough. Okay?
He could die as a result of the business.
Well, I don't know if he would die or not. Obviously, it's a question of Pikuach Nefesh. And in that case, you know, he would be permitted to break the fast. I mean, there are occasions when. I mean, the Gemara, in the last chapter of Yuma, you know, which deals with laws of Yom Kippur, with fasting and so on and so forth, but nevertheless, it allows for people, you know, who are suffering from terrible disease, where they might pass out or something like that, you know, that they are permitted to take enough nourishment just to keep going. Doesn't mean that you feast on Yom Kippur, but you take enough nourishment to keep going. Okay? Unfortunately, there are such occasions in life. So I can attest to it. Okay? So, all right. Yeah.
But what did he curse them for it?
Yeah, he was angry. He was angry because, as a result, because he came so fast with the news, he had to fast another day, one on top of the one. Okay. So. Okay. Sholach le Rav Huna bar Oven Rava. Rav Huna, the son of Oven, so he sent the following message to Rava. He said, Kad Chazi, when you see the Moshcha Tekufas Tevis Ad Shisa Ben Nisan, when you see that the Tekufas Tevis, now Tekufas Tevis, this is of course the winter season, okay? You know, we divide the year into four Tekufos. There's Tekufas Tishrei, which of course is the fall season, right? Then you have Tekufas Tevis, the winter season. You have Tekufas Nisan, which is the spring season. And finally, Tekufas Tamas, which is the summer season, okay? Now, it doesn't mean, incidentally, that it necessarily begins precisely on Rosh Chodesh. It could be later in the month that you have the beginning of the Tekufa. So, you know, this is worked out astronomically also, okay? So, he says to him, look, if you see the following, if you see that, that it's still winter even as far as the 16th day of Nisan. Let's put it differently. If you see that it's going to be winter even as far as the 16th day of Nisan, because obviously in the next one makes it clearer, then it says, Abra lahahishata. Then in that particular case he says, declare that year a leap year. Okay? Because why? We don't want to have Pesach occur in the winter time. We want Pesach to occur when it's the beginning of the springtime. And what's the basis of that? He says, "Well, no, sochushlo." He says, "And don't worry, do it. Don't have second thoughts about it." He says, "Nichsiv," because we have the pasuk which says specifically what Shomor is Chodesh HaAviv. Observe the month of Aviv, which means Shamar Aviv Shel Tekufa Sheyeheve Chodesh Nisan. He says, make sure you know that the Aviv Shel Tekufa, in other words, the time when the first grain begins to ripen, which is another meaning of the word Aviv, right? When you see that that happens, make sure that it is in the month of Nisan, right? And not in the month of, it should be in the proper time. Not a wintry situation, but it should be a spring situation. Because the Torah says that when does Pesach have to be observed? In the Chodesh HaAviv. And it has to be Shehei B'Chodesh Nisan, and in other words, that has to be in the month of Nisan. And there is a note by Rashi too, you know, that Chodesh, you know, it's over here, of course it's written, you know, without a Vav over there, but you know, that's common to, not to write the thing, but nevertheless it suggests the idea of Chodesh. Chodesh meaning what? Something new. In other words, this relates, for example, to a custom that we have, which you know, we call, you know, Kiddush Lavana. When are we supposed to say Kiddush Lavana? The answer is during the time that we can see that the moon is growing, which is until when?
13.
Until roughly about the 14th or the 15th, not beyond that, because from that point on, then the moon begins to wane.
Yeah.
So in other words, it has to be, as the Gemara would say, Bechidusho Shel Chodesh. It has to be at the time when the month is still in its new state. So he's saying the same thing over here. If you can see already on the basis of all the situation right now that it's too early for grain to appear and it's still wintry, then in that case he says add another month for the year, so that that way the actual flowering of the grain or whatever you want to call it will take place in the right month when it should be, which is Chodesh Hodim. That's the right time. So don't hesitate to do so, he said. Okay. Rab Nachman said to those people who sailed on the ocean, in other words, sailors, okay? Atun, you, he says, the law you need to bekvias niyarcha. You don't know exactly when we're going to declare Rosh Chodesh. I want to give you a sign that you'll know when is the proper time. He says, ki chazitu siharo, when you see that the moon Demashlim the Yoma, right? That the moon actually appears from the beginning of the night until when? Until daybreak. This is what it means. In other words, it completes the entire night. Because as we know, you know, sometimes the moon rises very early. You can see the moon at times, you know, prior to sunset, right? And at other times, you don't see the moon at all for several hours until early in the morning. So he tells them, look, you people, you're experienced, you're on the sea, you don't have any mountains that obstruct view, you don't have any skyscrapers to, you know, to prevent you from seeing what's what. If you look at the moon and you see that the moon lasts right until dawn, then you know what? Then you know that this is full moon time, okay? And if it's full moon, and of course it's full moon of Chodesh Nisan, right? So he says to them, Bi'iru Chamira, then get rid of your chametz. So now the Gemara says, Eimas Mashlim, when do we find the situation of the full moon? He says, B'chamisar, on the 15th. He says, we are required to actually get rid of chametz when? Not on the 15th of Nisan, but on the 14th of Nisan, right? So, what is he telling them then? Is he telling them then to first get rid of it on the 15th? That's already Pesach. You understand? It's wrong. So he says, but did who? So he says, to them, meaning the sailors, the Megalalahu Alma, that they discover the entire world. In other words, they roam the world and they have a chance to observe nature in its fullness. So he says, yeah, based on Ashton, he says, they know that actually it's full moon already, not on the 15th, but on the 14th night. Okay, so it's the night of the 14th, and that's the proper time to get rid of the chometz. Okay, so with that we complete this page, and now we're ready for Chof Aleph Amid Beis, which starts a new Mishnah. As you can see, we're beginning to head down towards the end of the first chapter of Rosh Hashanah. Okay, here it is. Okay, why don't we take a moment to pass these out. Okay. The new Mishnah begins by saying, Al Shnei Chodoshim Chalonis HaShabbos. For 2 months, it is permitted to violate the Shabbos, as I explained to you earlier, right? That means by traveling, okay? Al Nisan, the Al Tishrei. In order to be able to tell the Beis Din that they've seen the moon, which indicates that it's the beginning of Nisan, and also the beginning of Tishrei. Why? Shebahen Shnuchin Yotzim Nesuriyam. First of all, because on those occasions, then the emissaries of the Beis Din go into Syria in order to announce. Now, of course, by Syria they mean Aram, right? And it might even mean, let's say, the near part of Babel. Okay? But certainly into Syria, which is adjacent to Eretz Israel, but still, you know, it's to the north of Eretz Israel, okay? And on the way to Babylonia. All right? And not only are they permitted, you know, to go to Syria, the emissaries, but Uvehen, Misakim, and some of those. It is because of the announcement that they make concerning when was Rosh Chodesh Nisan, when was Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, because all the festivals are set up in accordance with this. We already explained, right? That if you know when is Rosh Chodesh Nisan, you know when to celebrate Pesach. Yeah. And not only that, but we also mentioned the fact that Shavuos too, we know when it is because of the fact that you count 50 days after the beginning of Pesach. Okay.
That's true, actually.
Right. And as far as the month of Tishrei is concerned, obviously you have Rosh Hashanah, you have Yom Kippur, and you have Sukkot. So that all these things are dependent upon the knowledge of when is the first day of Tishrei. Okay? Ukshehoya beis hamikdash kayam, and when the temple was still in existence, the chalonin afal kulon, then in that case, we're going to discover that who are they talking about, the chalalin, you know, that the people to may violate Shabbos, right? It was in reference to every month that they could do it, yipnei takonas hakorban, because they wanted to make sure that the special musaf offerings on Rosh Chodesh would be observed. You know, every day we always have the korban tomin, right? We always have a sacrifice in the morning and a sacrifice in the afternoon. But on Rosh Chodesh, we also have to add Musafim, just as we do on Shabbos. You have to add, you know, additional sacrifices. That's what the original meaning of the word Musaf is. It's the additional sacrifice, okay? So, therefore, in order to make sure that it would be observed at its proper time, so the witnesses were permitted to violate Shabbos in order to come to the Beis Din to proclaim that they had seen it, to witness the fact that they had seen the moon. Now, the Gemara starts by asking the following question. It says, Al Beis Chodosh and Misulom, only for these 2 months and no more? For Aminhu, didn't we learn in another Mishnah that had been quoted before? Al Vav Chodosh Hashluchim Yotzim, that there are 6 months upon which the emissaries go out, in addition to Tishrei and Nisan. We saw that, for example, they went out to tell when it's Adar, right? So that people would know when to celebrate Purim in its right time. They would go out in order to announce, you know, when was the beginning of Kislev, in order to know when to celebrate Hanukkah in its proper time, and so on. So that there were six such occasions were mentioned. So why does the Mishnah over here say simply what? Two and not six? So Amar Abaye, so Abaye said, Hori Koma. No, we have to understand that this is what the Mishnah is trying to tell us. It says, Al Kulon, yes, it is true that in reference to, now of course, Kulon does not mean over here all of them. So he's part of the problem. Kulon means that for the rest of them, in this particular case. In other words, for all the months except for what? For Nisan and Tishrei. So Taka, yes, Ashnuchin Yotzin. Ashnuchin Yotzin Niba Erev. They leave when it was while it is evening, right? Meaning what? Meaning even though they have not yet heard the statement from the Beis Din that this is Rosh Chodesh and that therefore the month is Mekudosh, but nevertheless they already can sense that the Beis Din is going to make the official announcement. So they get an early jump start, okay? Well, so they go out.
But I don't understand that.
You don't understand it.
How can I go out before it's announced?
Okay. The answer is that on the other months, there is no tremendous, you know, problem about Yom Tovim, you see. No. So that therefore, you know, they could go out and, all right, so if you miss Hanukkah by a day, so. Or if you miss, actually, of course, by Hanukkah, you know, anyway, it would be, you know, later in the month, the word would get, right? Purim too is the 14th of the month, so they would find out already. There's time enough, and then what? You're going to worry about when it's Chamish Osah Bishvat or something like that. You understand? It's a minor day.
Yeah.
Okay. Of course, with Av you have a problem, right? Right. Yeah. And with Av there is a problem. With Av you want to make sure that you're fasting in Tisha B'Av at the right day. Okay. But if you remember in Tainus, the Gemara in Tainus, they spoke about the fact, not so much about Tisha B'Av, but about, for example, when do you observe the fast of Tevis? Should it be Asara B'Tevis or not? When should you observe the fast of Tammuz? Should it be on the 17th or should it be on another occasion? Because we find that in the days of the first temple, that actually the breach in the wall took place earlier than the 17th of Tammuz. And so the Gemara there, if you remember, said that, well, we go on the basis of when these events occurred at the time of the second base of Mikdash, the destruction of the second base of Mikdash, when the fight against the Romans, these things happened, and that's why we observe, because it is closer to us than what happened in the days of the first base of Mikdash. So, okay, so you can find, you know, something upon which to hang
a loophole,
something, a loophole, if you wish, okay. As what? No, that's what I'm saying. It did not. There was a slight difference in time. But we go on the basis of when it happened in the second temple. Yeah, it's also in the month of Thomas, but it was not exactly the same day. Okay? All right. So, with all of them then, says, right, Shluchin Yosin Yibo Erev, right? So, the emissaries already leave while it was still... it was evening, but they had not heard yet the official announcement. But on Nisan the Al Tishrei, but when it comes to Nisan and Tishrei, they're not allowed to leave Ad Sheyishmu Pi Beis Din Mekudosh. They're not allowed to leave and begin to spread the news until they hear from the Beis Din itself, right, that the official announcement that the month has now been sanctified. Tanya Nami Hachi, we have another teaching which supports this. It says, Al Kulon Yotzim Mibayarev, for all the others, we go out when it's already evening, but Al Nisvi Al Tishrei, Archa Yishwan Pi Bezdin Mekudosh. Right, it's the same thing, right? There's another tradition that said the same thing, okay? That when it comes to Nisan and Tishrei, until they have to hear from the word, from the mouth of the Bezdin itself, the word Mekudosh. Tana Rabbanan. A sage just taught as follows. He says, "Minayin, how do we know Shemachalalin Aleihem is Hashabbos?
How do we know that they are permitted to the Mechalel Shabbos in this case? Now, I have to tell you, let's make it clear right now. Who actually is permitted to violate Shabbos? The answer is, it's the witnesses who have to come to the Beis Din to tell them that they saw the moon.
Right.
But the same permission, as we saw, for example, in the case of Levi, he couldn't travel on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. They are not allowed to violate the shluchim. Those who go out to spread the news are not allowed to violate Shabbos or Yom Tov. So when we're talking over here about the violation of Shabbos, in other words, that they are permitted to travel on Shabbos in order to get to the Beis Din, it's only the witnesses that are permitted to do it. Okay? But not the shluchim who afterwards go out to tell
the shluchim and the witnesses are not the same people.
No, they're not the same. Different people altogether. Right?
Well, how are they allowed to violate the Shabbos then?
By going more than the tchud.
More than the
2,000 amos, right. So they can get there as fast as they possibly can. Okay?
You can ride a nasal?
If necessary. If they were sick and they couldn't do it any other way, then they could do it. But otherwise, you're expected to walk.
2,000, how far is that?
2,000 amos is roughly...
quarter mile?
Yeah, let's see. If you say that an amo, you know, nobody knows the exact measurement of an amo. It's generally estimated somewhere between 18 inches and 24 inches, okay? All right, let's take the maximum, right? The maximum of 2 feet. All right, so it means that you go 4,000 feet, which is still less than a mile.
Less than a mile.
Right.
You mean to tell me that the people in the base thing can't see if it's a clear day, what...
You mean can the people in the Beis Din itself?
Yeah.
They relied on witnesses. Besides, you know, they would prefer, for example, a witness to come from a high place where they could see better, you know, the new moon, so that they get the word earlier, you see. They would prefer it that way, okay? What? Adam? Yeah, Adam means witnesses. Yeah. No, messengers are shluchim. Think of the Chabad. What do they send? They send shluchim, right? Okay. That the Yedim would be shluchim? No, they delegated to other people. Yeah, they delegated to others. Okay. So now the question is, where is the authority in the Torah that the witnesses should be permitted to violate this particular rule of Shabbos? So Talmud Lema. So we have a pasuk. What is the pasuk? The pasuk says, "Eile Moadei Hashem." These are the fixed festivals of Hashem, right? Asher Tikru Osam BeMoadam, which you are to proclaim at their proper time. Okay. So in other words, the Beis Din has to do the official proclamation as to when it is, and on the basis of the official proclamation, this is how we know when to observe the Moadei Hashem, the festivals of the Ribbono Shel Olam, okay?
Right.
So that therefore, in order for the witnesses, you know, to be able to enable the Beis Din to make this official proclamation, this is why they were given permission to go further than the Tchum Shabbos in this particular case, in order to bring the message, okay? And then the Gemara asked the following question, says, Yochol, shall we say that Kishem Shemachalalin Ad Sheizkachu, that just as they are permitted to violate Shabbos until the point where the month is declared official, right? Kach Vechalalin Ad Sheizkayimu, so likewise, they are permitted to violate in order to see that the decision of the Beis Din is carried out. Talmud Lomar. So that's why the Pasuk says, Asher Tikru Osam, right? That's why the Pasuk says, which you shall proclaim, Al Kriyasam, in order to make the proclamation, Atom Echalil, you're permitted to violate. The Iatom Echalil Al Kiyumon, but you are not permitted to violate Shabbos when it comes to simply carrying out the message, you know, of when the Beis Din was. I mean, we would think that they should be given carte blanche in order to travel and so to spread the word as quickly as possible. But this is not the case. They are not allowed to. And that explains why Levi, for example, came after, you know, what they had said was Yom Kippur, right? Even though he, you know, he knew that there was Yom Kippur according to Eretz Israel. Okay. Because he didn't travel on Shabbos or Yom Tov. That's why. All right. Gemara now continues and says, Ushahoya Beis HaMikdash Chaim. Remember the Mishnah says that, that when the Beis HaMikdash was in existence, then the Chalalin Af Al Kulon, if they took on as HaKobot, right? Then the Edom, the witnesses, were permitted to violate this rule concerning Shabbos for every month in order to make sure that the sacrifice of Rosh Chodesh would be carried on in its proper time. Tana Rabbanan, our sages taught, Morishona Oyu Mechalin Af Al Kulon. To begin with, yes, as long as, in other words, as long as the Beis HaMikdash was in existence, then the witnesses were permitted to violate the rule for every month, right? But Mishachorat Beis HaMikdash, when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, then Omar Lehen Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai. So Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai said to him, V'chi Yesh Korban? Do we then now have a sacrifice, you know, that you have to go and make to violate Shabbos in order to know when it's Rosh Chodesh? We don't have the sacrifice anymore. So Hiskinu, therefore, they made then a takona, they made a decree, Shelo Yehu Mechalalin, that they should violate Ela Al Nisan Yal Tishrei Bilvad, only for Nisan and Tishrei, because of the importance of the holidays, that people should know when it's the proper time for that. All right, we'll do this new Mishnah, and then we will call it a halt tonight, okay? The next Mishnah says, Bein Sheniro Ba'alil, Bein Sheniro Ba'alil. Okay. Whether the moon had been seen clearly, Ba'alil means that it's so clear that everybody could see it, okay? Whether the moon had been seen clearly, or the moon had not appeared, to, you know, and therefore had not been seen clearly by everyone, nevertheless, the Chalalin Olam is HaShabbos, right? So nevertheless, as we stated just a moment ago, it is permitted for the witnesses to violate the Shabbos. Rabbi Yossi Omer, he disagrees on it. He says, in Nira Ba'alil, ain't Mechalun on the Shabbos. Look, if you can see the moon clearly, then why should the witnesses have to go and violate Shabbos? Everybody could see it, right?
Said, yeah.
So, Masa, so it's a Maisa, here's a story, She'obru Yosem Ayvim Zog, that more than 40 pairs of witnesses passed by, the Ik from Rabbi Akiva Balod, and Rabbi Akiva stopped them in Lod. I guess he was anticipating that this was the airport that has to go through customs and immigration officials. So Rabbi Akiva stopped these witnesses, because he didn't want them, of course, obviously, to violate Shabbos. He stopped them. So, Sholach Le Rabbi Gamliel. So Rabbi Gamliel sent the following message to him. He says, in the Akiv Atoz HaRabim, if you are going to prevent many witnesses from coming, Nimseis Machshilin Losin Lovein, then you know what's going to happen? You will make it impossible for them to go and to report in the future. In other words, people will be discouraged from coming to witness because Rabbi Gamliel stopped, you know, he saw there was, a group of witnesses already. It's not even necessarily about Chil Shabbos over here. But he saw witnesses coming. You know, he figured, why do we need more than one pair of witnesses, right? Why do we need 40 pairs of witnesses? And so he stopped them over there. But Rabbi Gamliel said to him, look, if you discourage them from coming, then in the future they're not going to take the trouble to want to come and to testify if they see it. Okay, we shall stop at this particular point, and yes, Hashem, we shall continue from here next week. Alright, tonight is the 12th of April, correct? Right, in the year 2000, and we are going to, first of all, complete Chof Aleph Amud Beis in Rosh Hashanah, in other words, 21 B, and also go on to Chof Beis Amud Aleph and complete the very first Perek of Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara now wants to know, my mashma the hayalil lishna de miglehu. Wants to know, how do we know that the word alil that they said in the Mishnah, you know, Ben Shinira Ba'alil, right, what it was seen, and they interpret it as meaning clearly, so they say, how do they know that it means that it's open, it's revealed? This is the question. So, they quote a Pasuk. Pasuk says as follows, Omar Krah, this happens to be a verse in the Psalms, and it's written, Imreis HaDeshem HaMoris Nahoros, that the sayings of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam are pure sayings, Kesef Tzoruth Ba'alil O'oretz B'zuko Chivasayim. Literally, it means like refined silver, and here we have to say that they are interpreting the word Ba'alil in the sense of clearly. In other words, clearly or clear refined silver, in other words, so you can see that there's nothing, no imperfection in them, right? Ba'oretz upon the earth, B'zuko Chivasayim, and they are refined sevenfold can mean seven times, or it can mean seven times sevenfold. It all depends how we understand the virtue of sight.
Pure
normally is tahor. Well, you know, it says Yom Hashem tahoros. You see, the words of the Lord are pure. Now, I do have to tell you, not everybody is in agreement with the word that Ba'alil means what the Chachamim say. That's their opinion. Okay, they're entitled. Okay, and it's a very nice drash, because as we see, from that point on, from the time that the Mishnah was enunciated, so the expression has become accepted among everybody that, you know, Nireh Ba'alil means it was clearly seen by everybody. Okay, but it's a possibility that the original meaning of the Pasuk is that Ba'alil is actually the, the kind of an implement that you use in order to refine silver and gold, you understand? So that's probably the original meaning of it. However, it doesn't take away from the drash that we have over here. All right. So he says, look, it says Ba'alil, and Ba'alil means clearly, period. Okay. Rav and Shmuel, now there's machlekes between an understanding of Rav and Shmuel. Chad Omar, one of them said, what? He said, Nun Share Bino Nivru Boilom. He says there were 50 gates of wisdom that were created in the world. In other words, it's like one gate is higher than another and so on. Okay, so Rebbeinu Shel Olam created 50 gates of wisdom. The Chulon Nitnu L'Moshe Chaser Achad. And they were all given to Moshe with the exception of one. In other words, how many did Moshe Rabbeinu have? How many gates of wisdom? He had 49. Okay? So, I don't have to tell you that this is a tremendously high madrega, as we would say. In other words, high level, right? That Moshe Rabbeinu was favored, you know, with 49 out of 50 levels of understanding, right? And the reason why they said 49 is based upon another Pasuk in Tehillim. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, V'techasrehu me'at me'elohim, that you have made them but little lower than. Now the question is, how do you understand Elohim? Some would take it as meaning God, and others take it as the angels. In the English translation, you find you made them little, you know, but a little lower than the angels, okay? Fine vault, you know, is that, for example, every person should look upon himself. It's a chassidish word. It's a very good one that you should all remember. Everyone should look upon himself as two sides of a coin. Okay? Now, one side of the coin is a statement that we find made by Avraham Avinu, who said, "V'yonochi ofer v'efer." I am only dust and ashes. In other words, I am very lowly, right? But on the other side of the coin, a man should also remember that God has made you but little lower than the angels themselves, so that you should be able to strive to that degree. We have to have both. We have to have the humility of Onoichi or of Ha'efer, but at the same time, we have to strive to be also what Chasveichu Mi'at Elokim, to be just a tiny bit lower in the level than those of angels. All right. So, at any rate, if we say that there are 50 Share Bino, right, 50 gates of wisdom that were created, so
Moshe Rabbeinu, being a human being, is missing just 1 degree, so that gives him 49. Okay. Now, they take another pasuk, and this is a pasuk that we find in Koheles. Okay? It's written, Bikesh Koheles. Koheles sought, it says, Limso Dibrei Chafetz. Okay? In order to find, literally, words that are pleasing. Okay? In other words, words that represent wisdom. Okay? Now remember, who was Koheles identified with? With Shlomo HaMelech. Okay? Because, as it says in the beginning, Dibrei Koheles ben David, Melech v'Yerushalayim. Right? These are the words of Koheles, the son of David, the king in Jerusalem. So therefore, it's Shlomo HaMelech. Okay. So Shlomo HaMelech also wanted to have these, the, you know, various degrees of wisdom. As he says, as the Gemara continues, Bikesh Koheles, Koheles sought Liyos Kamosha. Right? He wanted to be on the same level as Moshe Rabbeinu. Yotzeso Batzkol, so a heavenly voice came, the Amra lo, and said unto him, it's written, Uchasov Yosher Divrei Emes, which means literally that the words of righteousness are words of truth. Meaning what? Meaning that the Torah itself contains the elements of truth, right? What is written in the Torah? What's written in Torah is, will I come, no be yod be Yisrael, Kamosha, right? That no prophet had ever arisen in Israel the like of Moshe Rabbeinu. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu is the highest of all the Nevi'im, the highest of all the prophets that ever arose in Israel. Okay. Now remember we said that Chat Omar, and it could either be Rav or Shmuel, because they don't identify which one is which, but nevertheless, what did the other one have to say? Right? The Chat Omar, and the other one said, well, okay, he says, B'Nevi'im Loikom. Alright, I'll grant you that among the prophets there did not arise another one the same level as Moshe Rabbeinu. But B'Melochim Kom. However, among the kings, there did arise one who had the same degree of wisdom as Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Namely, Shlomo HaMelech. Okay? So, Elama Nimekayim Bikesh Kehelsim Sodiva Chafetz. So how do I take the same pasuk that was interpreted before, that he sought to find words of wisdom that were pleasing, but, you know, he could not attain the same level as Moshe, and I maintain that he did. So he says, I use this pasuk for something else. He says, Bikesh Koheles. Koheles wanted Lodun Dinin Shebalev Shaloba Edim Shaloba Hasra. He wanted to be able to judge people when they came, you know, before him for a din, that with the wisdom of his heart, but without requiring any witnesses, or without requiring what we call hasra. Remember, we've had that time and again, that hasra means that you have to warn a person that he's doing evil and what the result of the evil will be, you know, that he is committing, that he's subject to this punishment or another one. Maybe he's subject to the punishment, let's say, corporal punishment. Maybe he's subject to malchus. Understand? You have to be able, you know, for a person to be judged fairly, he has to know, first of all, that he's doing wrong, and he has to be warned what the consequences of that is. And Shlomo HaMelech did not want to involve either witnesses or giving warning. Instead, he wanted to use only his own intelligence in order to know how to judge people. So Yotzes Abaskol, so Abaskol came, the Yom alone, and said to him, look, it says, Uchsuv Yosher, Divrei Emes. The Torah speaks the words of truth, the words of righteousness, and what is written in the Torah? It's written, Al Pishtayim Edim, right? In other words, we need, in any trial, to have 2 witnesses, or 3 witnesses, and so on and so forth. In other words, you cannot judge a case simply on the basis of your own intelligence. You must have witnesses, you have to follow a procedure. The Torah has laid down, you know, what are the rules for the procedure in judging something, and you have to go on that basis. And not, you know, to presume that you are so intelligent, so high above everybody else, that you can automatically assume all this without having to go through what the Torah itself has to relate. All right, now we go on to the next page. Okay, here we are. Final page of this chapter. Okay. All right. Top of the page of Chof Beis Amid Aleph. They go back again. Remember that, you know, the normal arrangement in the Gemara is that first they have a Mishnah, right? And then the Gemara comments on the Mishnah. So they usually go phrase by phrase in commenting. Okay. So they comment now on the story that we read. Okay, the story that we read, you know, that more than 40 witnesses wanted to come, than 40 pairs of witnesses. Zug means a pair, okay? More than 40 pairs of witnesses wanted to come and to testify that they had seen the moon, and Rabbi Akiva stopped them from coming. Tanya, we have learned in the Baraisa as follows. Omer Rabbi Yehuda said, okay, Chatz B'Sholom. What? Wait, we almost dropped it. Oh, thank you. That would be a tremendous disaster. Thank you, Bob. All right, that Chatz B'Sholom means Chatz B'Sholom. God forbid, he says, She Rabbi Akiva Ikvan. He says, it was not Rabbi Akiva who stopped them. No, Ela Shezafar Rosho Shel Gader Ikvan. Instead, it was some big shot politician by the name of Zephyr, who was the head of Gader. I guess it's, I know this in Israel, there's a place called Gadera, which is in the southern part of Israel. I don't know if there's a connection between Gadera and Gader, because Gader normally means a fence. This is the meaning of it, all right? But maybe it was, let's say, a boundary city or something like that. So at any rate, there they were. He was a big shot, and he stopped them. V'sholach Rabban Gamliel, so Rabban Gamliel sent a message for Riduhu Migdulosu, and they fired him. They did to him what they did to Keratiotis and the big dick. Okay. So, all right. So the Mishnah, okay. So in other words, don't blame Rabbi Akiva, but blame this Zephyr. Okay. Next Mishnah.
But it does say that Rabbi Akiva
stopped. Sure, it says.
Blaming somebody else.
Why not? Why should Rabbi Akiva be the guilty party? After all, this is pastished, you know. So therefore they came up with a different tradition.
All right.
Okay. All right. Remember, again, all this was oral. Oral transmission. People remember these things and they tell the story. But sometimes you can get two different versions of the same story. We can attest with from our own experience, okay? So, according to the Mishnah, it was Rabbi Akiva, but as I say, according to this Barais, it wasn't Rabbi Akiva, but it was Zephyr, who was the bad guy. Okay. The next Mishnah. Alba v'no sheruas ha-chodesh yelchu. Okay. If a father and son saw the new moon, right, then they should go, Yelchu, they should go to the court in order to testify. But immediately there is a problem, which the Mishnah is going to address itself to. I just want to point out that we have definite rules concerning who is eligible to testify, and close witnesses cannot testify. You can have one of them, but you can't have both of them. You understand? Because that's a violation. And this is true of witnessing in general, according to halacha. For example, could a father and a son, both of whom, let's say, were Shomer Shabbos, could they sign on as witnesses to a chuppah or to a ksuba, something like that? The answer is absolutely no. Not only that, But if they are related by blood to the chassan or to the kala, they can't serve as witnesses either, because you cannot have that. They have to be independent of the of each other and of the parties involved.
In other words, at a wedding, if the witnesses...
You have to look for witnesses, right, who are not related.
Can't be related to the groom.
Right, nor to the bride, nor to each other. Yeah. So, as the Mishnah continues and says, Lo shemitz tofrim zeim zeh, not that the two of them can be combined as witnesses, Ela, but rather, she'im yiposel echad mehem, should it happen that one of them is declared unfit or invalid as a witness for whatever reason may be, you know, the court can decide that they refuse to accept the testimony of a person because of some blemish that this person has. We'll see, for example, a little bit later on in the page, you know, what are some of the blemishes that disqualify, okay? So, if one of them should happen to be disqualified, then you start hashenim acher, then the other one, the party who is not disqualified, can join with one other in order to give testimony before the court that they had seen the moon. Alright. However, if you think it's unanimous, it's not unanimous. Even though this is the halacha, but nevertheless, as we can see, there are people who hold contrary views. One of them is Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon Omer, he says, Obuv no, the cholak krovim, he says, father and the son and all who are related to each other, could be first cousins, you understand, it could be an uncle and a nephew or something like that. He says Sherem Leida Sachurish, when it comes to giving testimony that the new moon had been seen, then we relax the rules and we accept the testimony of people who are closely related to each other. Amar Rabbi Yossi, so Rabbi Yossi came along and he said Ma Sevet Tuvia Rofe. He says, I'll tell you a story about Tuvia the doctor. Shiroes HaChodesh B'Rushalayim. He saw the new moon when he was in Yerushalayim. Hu uvno v'yavdo mishuchrar. He saw it, his son saw it, and also his slave who had been freed, emancipated, saw him. Yeah. The kiblu ha-kohanim oso v'yesbeno. So the kohanim who were at that time in the court, in Yerushalayim, right? They accepted him and his son as witnesses, right? They accepted the testimony of him and his son. Ufaslu es ato, but they invalidated his slave, even though, of course, the slave had been freed. But we know if the slave had not been freed, then certainly he would not be qualified as a witness. Okay, we'll see you in a few moments that, you know, disqualification goes down to him too. Okay? But because he was freed, you would think that they would accept it, right? But according to the story that the Rabbi Yossi heard, you know, about Tuvia Rofe, so according to him, they declared that the slave was invalid. Ushabon, if they bezed him, but then when they came before the court, the first, you see, they had to pass through Kahana. Okay? You understand? First they went by the Kahanim, and so the Kahanim said, okay, you and you are okay, but you are not okay. Alright? Then they went on to the Sanhedrin, which was meeting presumably in the Lishkas HaGozis, in other words, in the special chamber in the Beis HaMikdash where the Sanhedrin used to meet. And what happened over there? So it says over there, Kiblu Oso, in other words, the Dayodim, the judges, and the Bezdin, they accepted him. The Es Avdo, and they accepted also his slave who had been freed. They accepted the testimony of both of them. But Ufoslu Espano, what did they do with the son? They said that the son is a melon. In other words, what the Mishnah has to say at the beginning of the over here, namely that you cannot accept the testimony of both father and son. So, obviously, there's a problem over there because they have two different versions, right? And one, they are accepted, according to Rabbi Shimon over there, who says what? That no matter how close they are related to each other, we can accept it because this is a special rule that the, you know, for testifying that they'd seen the new moon, they relaxed the rule. And on the other hand, Rabbi Yossi's story says nothing doing, not so. Omar Rabbi Levi, so the Gemara says now, my time of the Rabbi Shimon, says, what is the reason why Rabbi Shimon said that you could relax the rules? He says, Dichsev, because the Pasuk says what? Vayomer Hashem el Moshe el Aaron b'Eretz Mitzrayim le'mor, that God said unto Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, Hachodesh hazeh lochem, this month is unto you. And remember, of course, the rest of it is Rosh Chodeshim, right? It's the head of all the months, and so on and so forth. And from this we learn the whole principle of what? Of Kiddush HaChodesh, that you have to see the new moon, you have to declare that you have seen it, have witnesses, and then the official proclamation is made. Now, Eidah Zu Tehei Kishero, he says, this testimony is kosher bochem in you, meaning whom? Moshe and Aaron, right? So in other words, the Moshe and Aaron are brothers, you understand? And the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is willing to accept their testimony, then in that case, Rabbi Shimon says, in that case then you have to accept a father and a son as well, or any kind of close relatives. Barabbanan, the rabbis come and they say, no, that's not what the Pasuk is referring to. The Pasuk says, Eidu Sutei Mesur Elohim. What the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is saying to Moshe and Aaron is that the proclamation of the new moon, this is given over to you. You have the official duty of proclaiming when it's the new moon, but that doesn't make you what? Doesn't make you the witnesses. You understand? So we see that the Rabbanan stand by their statement, namely that you cannot accept the testimony of close relatives. Okay. Omer Rabbi Yossi. So then we go back again to the story about Basi Betuvia Rofe, about the story about Tuvia Rofe. So Omer Rav Chonon Bar Rova. So Rav Chonon Bar Rova said, Hilchasok Rav Shimon. He says, I'm telling you that the halacha follows Rav Shimon, in other words, what? That we can relax the rules when it comes to Eidus HaChodesh, in other words, the witnessing of when is the new month. So Omer Le Rav Chonon Le Rav Chonon Bar Rova. So Rav Chonon answered Rav Chonon Bar Rova, and he said to him, look, it says Rabbi Yossi, right? Umatzeh, right? Says, first of all, it's a teaching of Rabbi Yossi, who is a recognized scholar, and also a story which brings it out, namely the story of what? Of Tuvia HaRofe and the testimony. Ve'at Amra Tilchasok Rabbi Shimon, and you say that the Halacha follows Rabbi Shimon, after all, didn't the sages say what? That when it came before the Beis Din, what did they do? Did they accept the father and the son? No. They only accepted the father and the emancipated slave. Right? But they did not accept the testimony of the father and son.
Why?
Huh?
Why did they?
No. They didn't accept it because they followed the rule that they cannot be related to each other as witnesses. Okay? So, So he said to him, oh, Zimnan Sagian, Amrit Kameh, the Rav Hilchasok Rav Shimon. Look, he says, aren't there many, many times, he says, that I have said in the presence of Rav, that the halacha follows Rabbi Shimon. In other words, if Rabbi Shimon has a machloikas with somebody else, right, then who is considered the more authoritative teacher? It's Rabbi Shimon, right? So if that's the case, then we should say what? That in the case then of a father and a son, then we should be able to accept that testimony. And as Rabbi Shimon goes further,